The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from AAA Go Magazine, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Travel, please let me remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. These articles are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Well, in just a few days, Christmas will be behind us, and we will be greeting a new year. On today's Armchair Traveler, we begin with hot spots for a new year, and this is New Year capitalized, and this is from the November-December 2018 issue of AAA Go Magazine. The editors have picked a few fun places in the Carolinas to ring in 2019. So here you go. New Year's Eve, Possum Drop, Andrews, North Carolina. In its 25th year, the Possum Drop was previously held in the nearby Clay County community of Brasstown, Possum Capital of the World, they say. Clay Logan, who originated the celebration at his store Clay's Corner, will MC this year's festivities. This alcohol-free event is ideal for families seeking a truly unique New Year's Eve event. Daytime activities include skits, live music, and refreshments, think funnel cake and hot chocolate. Just before midnight, the possum is slowly lowered in its cage. Now, don't worry. Procedures for possum care are specific and include comfortable accommodations, food and water, a climbing limb, and a veterinary check. And you can get more details by making a call, and that call is to Andrews, North Carolina, for the New Year's Eve Possum Drop, 828-321-1728. That's 828-321-1728. Now on to New Year's Eve Pickle Drop in Mount Olive, North Carolina. The corner of Cucumber and Vine at the Mount Olive Pickle Company is the place to be for their annual New Year's Eve Pickle Drop. Thousands will be on hand to witness the 3-foot pickle make its descent on the 45-foot flagpole at 7 p.m., which is actually midnight Greenwich Mean Time. And it's going to land in a huge redwood pickle tank at the bottom of the pole. This family-friendly event begins and ends at a perfect time for kids who want to participate in New Year's Eve festivities but might not be able to hang until midnight. Live music begins at 5:30, and guests can enjoy free cookies, hot chocolate, and, of course, pickles. You can also bring canned food or make a financial contribution to the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina. Donors earn the chance to win door prizes, which include a giant pool pickle. And you can get more information online at MountOlivePickles.com. That's MountOlivePickles.com. First night is in Raleigh, and with just about everything from a daytime do-it-yourself festival at the North Carolina Museums of History and Sciences to evening amusement rides, First Night Raleigh provides plenty of entertainment to fill your day on December 31st. In its 28th year, the event plays host to almost 100 performances in more than 35 venues throughout the downtown area. Part of the festivities include the dropping of a 10-foot, 1,250-pound copper acorn just before midnight. Raleigh is known as the City of Oaks for the large number of oak trees that line the city's streets. For more information online, just visit firstnightraleigh.com. That's firstnightraleigh.com. Now down to Yorktown Countdown in Charleston, South Carolina. For a unique coastal celebration, ring in the new year with the only aircraft carrier ball drop on the East Coast. Charleston's largest annual New Year's Eve party takes place on the USS Yorktown, one of the Essex-class aircraft carriers built during World War II for the U.S. Navy. The vessel was a recovery ship for the Apollo 8 space mission and was used in the movie Tora, 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 which recreated Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor. During this VIP event, you can explore the mammoth aircraft carrier and enjoy all-inclusive premium bar and local cuisine. The celebration also includes 3 stages featuring live entertainment. And please note, this is a 21 and over event, and limited tickets are available. If you want more details, just visit YorktownCountdown.com, YorktownCountdown.com. And then finally, New Year's Eve stroll under the lights at Merle's Inlet, South Carolina. Surround yourself with holiday lights, live music, and thousands of hand-lit candles as you wander throughout Brick Green Gardens for this New Year's Eve celebration. This event runs from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. and is a perfect low-key celebration for families. Light refreshments will be on hand for purchase. Reservations are required and space is limited. AAA members receive a discount on their admission. And to reserve your ticket, just visit brookgreen.org. brookgreen.org. And the editors remind us that the event details are subject to change, so you may want to go online early or just before you go to make sure there's been no major changes to what you'd like to go and visit and enjoy. Okay? Well, let's see here. What would you do if you only had 36 hours to see some of the sights of a big city? Now, that's the concept behind a New York Times travel series, and today we're going to spend 36 hours in Denver, led by writer Elaine Glusick, and appearing in the November 15, 2018 issue of the New York Times. A weekend in the Mile High City offers something for everyone. A flourishing restaurant scene, microbreweries, miles of trails for skiers and bikers alike, and a vibrant street art movement. Now, Elaine begins by saying, in the last 7 years, Denver's population has grown by more than 100,000. A boom many residents credit to the sunny weather, proximity to the Rocky Mountains, and density of cultural attractions. With that growth has come not only construction cranes, but also improved transit systems, including a convenient new light rail line linking the airport to downtown over 23 miles away, dispensing with the need for rental cars over weekend visits. Visitors using the light train alight at the renovated Union Station in the heart of the city, filled with new breweries, expanded museums, a burgeoning street art movement, and an explosive culinary scene producing thematic food halls and destination meals from brunch through dinner. There's always the chance to walk, cycle, run, or ski, to go over hundreds of miles of recreational trails if you desire. And if your flight is delayed, there's a free ice skating rink at Denver International Airport from November 23rd to January 6th. And no matter how you get to or leave the airport to go to your destination in Denver, let me tell you to look on the side of the roads because it's just a mesa and there are gophers and prairie dogs galore. You will get an entertainment all the way into town. Okay, on Friday, now we're starting our 36-hour clock here at 3 p.m. at Cultural Campus. The Denver Art Museum, with its distinctively angular Daniel Lipskin-designed wing, anchors what has been turned into the city's museum quarter, now that the Kirkley Museum of Fine and Decorative Art moved two blocks away. The Quirky Museum, admission $10, which doubled its exhibition capacity, preserves the original studio of Vance Kirkland, who often painted suspended on straps above his canvases. Before reaching it, visitors pass through the encyclopedic collection of decorative pieces from Art Nouveau tapestries to postmodern sofas that crowd the walls and floors salon style. A moving union of art and architecture lies between the Denver Art Museum and the Kirkland in the Clifford Steel Museum, and the admission there is $10. Brad Klopfel of Allied Works Architecture designed the minimalist textured concrete building with naturally lit galleries to house the nearly complete collection and archives of the abstract expressionist painter Clifford Steel. Now at 6:30, we have a destination dinner. Denver's culinary mania is evident in brunch queues and difficult-to-get dinner reservations. Make one of those reservations well in advance for Tavernetta, a new, sophisticated Italian magnate from the group behind Fresca Wood and Wine in nearby Boulder. To get to the tables, diners walk through the kitchen, a scenic appetizer to the chef Ian Wortham's regional and seasonal dishes, which recently included homemade, garganilla pasta with mushrooms and asparagus. This is $32 on the menu. And then there's roast quail with farro, chickpea, and prosciutto for $28. And no reservation? Well, try Tavernetta anyway. There's a spacious lounge with fireside tables as well as numerous stools around the bar. Now, at 9 p.m., it's time for Nightcap Madness as we continue our 36 hours. Despite Denver's plethora of breweries, beer isn't the only drink in town. From the hidden to the C&B scene, the selection of cocktail lounges warrants a nightcap or two. In Lower Downtown, a.k.a. Lodo, hit the rejuvenated Union Station and find the mezzanine to reach Cooper Lounge, where sofas get offer greater purchase for admiring the grand 1914 station. In the polished Cherry Creek neighborhood, look for a gold doorbell in an alley behind the Halcyon Hotel to find B&GC, a stylish subterranean lounge with carefully crafted drinks such as the Bourbon Maple Distant Lover for $15. In the River North Art District, known as Reno, or Rhino, I should say, New York's cult mixologist, Death and Company, are newly spiking the cocktail scene in a clubby room with grand chandeliers and a menu the size of a novel. Woo-hoo. Now, time to take a nap, and we're up and at 'em at 9 a.m. the next morning. And it's bike or ski the creek. Backed by the Rocky Mountains to the west, the Mile High City tends to draw outdoorsy types. Cycling the Cherry Creek Bike Path, a 40-mile path along the tributary, is one of the easiest ways to join the athletic crowds here. It links up with the nearly 30-mile Greenway Trail along the South Platte for more ambitious riding. Rent a Denver B bicycle from the citywide bike share system from more than 85 stations around the town, and the passes run from $9 for 24 hours. Biking is a year-round sport in Denver, which tends to be dry, but on snow days, the cross-country skis come out. And having been to Denver, I will tell you, it's a great walking city, too. So if you don't want to use these other amenities, you certainly can use your 2 feet and enjoy it. Well, it's 11 a.m. time for a brunch bunch. Here we go. Perhaps because of all that early morning exercise, brunch is a popular meal. In the Lohi or Lower Highlands area alone, choices include the butchery and the seafood-centric Old Major, the fried chicken star Low Country Kitchen, and the Latin American Cantina Señor Bear. An atmospheric choice, Linger, occupies the former Olinger Mortuary, a vast warehouse-like space with multiple levels offering good views of downtown. Global brunch dishes include breakfast dosa for $16 and hangover Raymond for $17, accompanied by bottomless mimosas for $15. Well, it's 1 p.m., time to head to the Maker Mart. Denver has some nice neighborhoods for boutique shopping, including Highlands and Berkeley, but the opening of the Source Hotel and the Market Hall in Rhino next to the Source Food Hall has given shoppers a place to do some concentrated browsing of wares from local artisans. The hotel's second story serves as a retail market hall, home to shops and kiosk from Winter Session, a Denver-based leather goods maker. Vinyl Me, Please, a local record dealer, and the sunglasses and ski goggles brand Native Eyewear based in nearby Longmont. You'll find them alongside carefully curated out-of-towners, including the street art-focused Station 16 Gallery from Montreal and the design goods shop Poquito from Los Angeles. Now it's 4 p.m., and it's time for a craft beer crawl. The home of the sprawling Great American Beer Festival each fall, Denver has long been a champion of the microbrewing revolution. While the Denver Beer Trail has over 100 entries on its map, several are clustered in Reno, making a progressive tour a pedestrian affair. Our mutual friend, a friendly taproom state, flags on the menu indicate Colorado-grown barley and hops, including Colorado Pale Ale and Dad's Brown Ale. Pints are $6. Down the street, the Industrial Ratio Beer Works, which sometimes serves a refreshing handwritten wit for $6, rolls up garage-style doors on its popular patio, by the way. And nearby, the beloved Fort Collins Brewery Odell Brewing Company opened a cozy two-story taproom in view of a mural depicting hops covering the side of its historic brick building. The Rhino District also teems with culinary intrigue from the new Super Mega Bien, serving Mexican tapas densum style, to the contemporary wood fire grill, Acorn. Because reservations are hard to come by, hit Hop Alley early. The chef, Tommy Lee, who also runs Uncle, a Raymond specialist in Lohi, serves regional Chinese fare with a focus on fine ingredients and the use of a wood grill in a former soy sauce factory where hip-hop commonly rings out across the lively dining room. Most of the vegetable, protein, noodle, and rice dishes seem designed to share, including savory kung pao cauliflower for $15, grilled octopus with spicy gochujang sauce for $27, and garlic shrimp noodles for $23. Several of the cocktails come in large format shareable sizes, too. I don't think I've ever heard a beverage quite described like that. Large format, shareable. Okay. On to 9 p.m. and catch the late set. There's a swarm, slightly retro vibe to Nocturne Jazz Club, where an intriguing artist-in-residence arrangement books musicians for multi-week runs, encouraging them to explore the music of a jazz lesson, concentrate on genre, or produce their own original compositions. Brick walls and high ceilings with exposed ductwork don't interfere with the sound quality coming from the raised stage that is the focal point of the music venue, which also acts as a supper club serving a full menu. Reservations include a cover fee, and that varies, and the bar is as careful with its cocktails as the musicians are with their playlist. Well, up the next morning, following a good night's sleep, I hope, it's 10 a.m., and it's a street art stroll to the casual pedestrian. Denver doesn't appear rich in street art. Trust Aaron Spradlin and James Carlson to show you the significant treasures on the walls and in the alleys of the River North Art District on their Denver graffiti tour. Inspired by a mural tour they took in Bogota, Colombia, the pair launched their tour this spring, and it runs year-round. The two-hour itinerary introduces memorable works by Gamma and Jeremy Burns. The guides distinguish street art and murals from more haphazard graffiti in their thoughtful discourse that covers artwork, mining topics from political to mimic. And the tour ends in a hidden alley covered in murals and popular with selfie shooters. Well, it's 12:30, and as we spend the last couple of hours in Denver, it's time for some musical fare. Food halls seem to be popping up everywhere, including the new Denver Milk Market in Lodo, and in new iterations such as the micro distillery-centric Booze Hall in Rhino. The beauty of the collection of food stalls at the new Zeppelin Station is management's effort to fill the vast shed-like development on light rail and line with food, ethnic foods not easily found elsewhere. Now, the local favorite, Vinjong Bakery, opened a stall in Zeppelin serving its signature banh mi sandwich served with house-made chili sauce for $8.75. And there's the Indian street food at Namkeen, fried chicken at Enjoy Korean Kitchen. And we have smoked meats at Afu. Now, we finish with a scoop of velvety chocolate from Gelato Boy for $4.45 while listening to live music on Sundays, on select Sundays, that is, and watching the Denver Broncos on a big screen. So if you're a Broncos fan, this is one way to end the tour, isn't it? Now, Denver was considered among the top 50 places to visit in 2018. This was a selection by travel writers and industry promoters. And if you'd like to go to Denver, here are some tips they offer for where to stay. An urban resort in the upscale Cherry Creek District, the 154-room Halcyon Hotel features a rooftop pool and bar, the subterranean cocktail lounge BG&C, and a gear garage with loaner outdoor equipment, and the rooms go from $325 to $245 a night. And then you have the new Ramble Hotel in Rhino, and it looks like a warehouse rehab with a handsome red brick exterior and double-height lobby. The new building houses Death & Company, Denver Cocktail Lounge, in the lobby, filled with tufted sofas and chandeliers. And in addition to 50 cozy rooms, the Ramble House a theater, the Mexican restaurant Super Mega Bienda, and coffee bar, and the rooms there go from $249 a night. And you can also rent a loft downtown or an apartment in the Highlands, to name two central areas with ample inventory on HomeAway.com. Lofts in Lodo, walking distance to Union Station, and other attractions start at $87. So, you get your money's worth when you try to do 36 hours in Denver, don't you? Well, let's move on. From the Mile High City, let's now head to Portland, Oregon, where writer Aaron E. Williams is going to show us how to sip our way through tea houses in Portland. Her article is from the August 23rd, 2018 issue of the Washington Post. It sounds weird, and it sounds weird, but if you slurp it, you'll get better flavor, the server said. She arranged a flight of four teas before me. I glanced around the busy tasting room of Stephen Smith Tea Maker. Everyone else was delicately sipping their brews, so I slurped surreptitiously. I was in Oregon at the end of a whistle-stop tour of some of Portland's best-known tea houses. Although Stumptown seems to revolve around coffee, it is also a city of tea, from quiet cafes to larger retail operations. Its local businesses have cast a leafy influence on American tea culture, ushering in a new era of specialized quaffing. My informal tally counts roughly 24 tea houses, plus several tea supply shops and breweries. The city even celebrates its tea community with Tea Fest PDX, which was held this year on July 21st. The day-long festival brings together enthusiasts and vendors for workshops, classes, musical performances, yoga, and more. On a stereotypically drizzly Portland morning, I dodged the drops to reach the Tao of Tea, a two-story tea house in downtown Lansu Chinese Garden. The company has two local tea houses, a retail store, and a microbrewery that bottles teas for national distribution. One of the first U.S. tea companies to join the fair trade movement, it also takes pride in using organic teas and traditional tea-making methods. The tea house was serene, with only a few other customers. I chose a table near windows overlooking the garden's courtyard and lake. In front of me, a server demonstrated a traditional Gong Fu tea ceremony. I had selected a fermented pu'er variety, named for the city in China, and which she had recommended as being particularly forgiving, a nod to my beginner status. "How many years do you think have people been drinking tea?" she asked, and I guess 2,000. "But I was off by a millennia, 5,000, she said. She arranged a few accoutrements, teapot, tiny cups, and bamboo tools on a tray while explaining the process. After flash steeping the tea to remove tannins, she replaced some leaves in my teacup to steep. Then I was on my own, although my hands lacked her steadiness. 3 minutes later, I was sipping the strong, earthy pu'er and nibbling my accompanying snacks, spicy steamed tofu and candied mango slices topped with coconut flakes and goji berries. I poured cup after steaming cup while watching passerbys enjoy the rainy garden. Jasmine Pearl's airy flagship tea house sits across the Willamette River in Portland's northeast neighborhood. The company supplies teas, including 50-plus organic varieties, to more than 500 retailers nationwide. The tea house's long stone counter and attractive tables arrayed with tea merchandise awaited the half-dozen or so customers browsing during my visit. Dozens of loose-leaf teas are available for easy sniffing, and its menu includes tea lattes and sparkling teas. A sign lists classes and events, such as an introduction to tea leaf reading and a demonstration of Japanese tea ceremony. I was jittery from the pia, so I chose a non-caffeinated Earl Grey Rubios, the citrusy bergamot tempered with steamed almond milk. I also bought a vegan caramel brownie to go. And you thought coffee had some weird combinations, didn't you? Here we go. Further south, customers enter the Selwood location of Tea Chai Tay through a deceptively diminutive train caboose, which opens into a lofty, spacious tea house. The caboose, dating in 1920, might look familiar to Portlandia watchers. The series featured in its second through fourth seasons. In keeping with its hipster cred, the Tea Chai Tay offers kombucha on tap, mason jar chandeliers, mismatched rustic wood tables, and a cozy outdoor seating area reinforce the aesthetic. I was overwhelmed by the menu's 120 scratch-made tea blends, including fair trade and organic, 75 options there. So the woman behind the counter recommended a light-tasting white peach tea. I settled into a table next to a miniature library, sipped my drink, and tucked a similarly peachy kombucha bottle into my bag for later. Well, the next morning, I was ready for two final heavy hitters. First up, the light-filled flagship location of Townshend's Tea Company, a gallery-lined Alberta Street. Local photographers' art hung on the walls, and the menu offered a stunning variety of tea: white, green, black, oolong, pu'er, kai, rooibos, yerba mate, and herbal. I ordered a mammoth teapot of minty organic Highland Chai, and then sweet with coconut milk. I also refilled my 32-ounce mini growler with an oaky kombucha from the tap. Well, Townshend's distributes its organic raw and wind-powered bottled kombucha throughout the United States and Canada, and purchased 3 ounces of vanilla rooibos loose leaf for home. Well, a cluster of tables, a comfortable couch, and an outdoor garden accommodate an equal mix of out-of-towners and regulars who have made Townshend's their workspace. Many of the customers come from nearby Concordia University. Our bubble tea is a big hit with students, the barista explained. Townsend's was tweaking its bubble tea ingredients to make them healthier, he added, and he invited me to a tasting at the Montevilla location. Especially here in Portland, people care about what they eat. We want them to have options, he said. Near the river, Stephen Smith Tea Maker's sprawling southeast tasting room is housed in a 13,000-square-foot warehouse space in Central East Side neighborhood. High ceilings, cement floors, and glass doors frame the communal wooden tables and provide an industrial ambiance that reflects the neighborhood. The server brought me a flight of four teas, ranged from green to black to herbal, and made that slurping recommendation. I sniffed the dry leaves and read the informational cards that accompanied each variety. The flight represented a fraction of the menu's 50-plus varieties from India, Africa, China, Sri Lanka, and other locales. Behind the counter, another room houses production, blending, and packing. A recipe testing lab also adjoins the tea room. During my visit, several executives were sampling new summer teas on tap. Stephen Smith was a Portland native who co-founded two of the tea's biggest names, Stash and Tazo. In 2009, Smith and his wife, Kim Dement, launched Stephen Smith Tea Maker in Northwest Portland. Smith died in 2015, but his entrepreneurship and palate helped usher in a new era of specialty tea appreciation in the United States. That influence is just one of the ways that Portland's tea culture continues to reinvigorate and transform the way that we experience brews from Puerth to Kombucha in Stumptown and beyond. Some of these teas do have double pronunciations, and it wasn't necessarily the one was preferred over the other. I think it's just a matter of dialect. By the way, Erin Williams, the writer, is based in Nevada, and she has a website if you'd like to follow her, erinwilliams.com, E-R-I-N-E, Williams.com, erinwilliams.com. And she has included with her article some tips if you'd like to go to Portland, where to drink. Well, there's Stephen Smith Tea Maker. You'll find that at 1626 Northwest Sturman Street and 110 Southeast Washington Street, a couple of locations. And online, they are at smithtea.com. The original Smith Tasting Room is located in Northwest Portland. The 13,000-square-foot Southeast Tasting Room also houses production and a tea lab. Both locations offer more than 50 teas, including seasonal and nitro choices on tap, as well as classes and workshops, and those teas start at $3 and go up. And, you know, when they mention a tea lab, I might point out they even have some brewery labs, for example, in Asheville, North Carolina. And what that means is you can go in, if they're trying something new and you want to be one of the taste testers, you know, go at it. Well, the Tower of Tea is also in Portland at 3430 Southeast Belmont Street. And another location at 239 Northwest Everett Street. Online, check it out at taooftea.com, T-A-O-O-F-T-E-A, taooftea.com. The original tea house in Portland's oldest adjoins a retail store in southeast Portland. The Tower of Cosmic Reflections Tea House is located in the Lansu Chinese Garden, and customers must pay $10 for admission to the garden, and menus feature more than 100 teas starting at $3.50. Then we have Jasmine Pearl at 724 Northeast 22nd Street. You can check them out online at thejasminepearl.com, J-A-S-M-I-N-E, thejasminepearl.com. The menu includes sparkling teas, tea lattes, and brewed teas. The shop also carries a wide variety of tea merchandise and offers classes, and those teas started at around $2.75. And that's just about going to do it for this journey, as we have enjoyed Portland and tea sipping today, and we've also run out of time for Armchair Traveler. Be sure to listen next time. Hope you've enjoyed your journey today. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And our broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.